This is the Podcast Replay. This Podcast Replay is brought to you by the finest racks in the business. Pallet Rack City. 305-424-8547. That's 305-424-8547. Pallet Rack City in Hialeah is the company you need when you want your warehouse sporting the finest racks in the business. After all, who doesn't love a great rack?
All right, we are back and ready for our number three of the program. Appreciate all of you, as always, keeping it locked here and supporting the show. Nice job by the Raiders surviving. I thought Gruden said, what is it? He died, he woke up, and then he died again in the game. That was actually good. Marlins, they defeat the Nationals 3-0. They're 61-83. Tonight, 7:05, Nationals and Marlins. Jesus Luzardo taking on Eric Fetty. And 7:05 first pitch. And Inter-Miami, the red-hot Inter-Miami in action tonight. They are at Red Bull Arena taking on Toronto. Looking forward to that game. I won't be watching Marlins. I will be watching Inter right now at this point. I mean, come on, give me a break. Although I got to give Inter credit, I told you guys this a couple of months ago, that Inter Miami and the Miami Marlins have to turn it up, because once football starts, they're going to lose any kind of attention they possibly could have gotten. Sure, there's a group of hardcore soccer fans like myself that we're going to watch and we're going to support no matter what. And it really doesn't collide with a Dolphins football game. It's normally not on at the same time anyway. Most soccer games are on Saturdays, you know. Once in a while, you'll have one like this on a Tuesday, maybe once or twice a year, a Wednesday a couple times, maybe a Friday too a couple times. But really not a lot of there is like one or two Sunday games, but I think they're usually before the NFL season starts more often than not. So Miami, Inter, and the Marlins had the summer to themselves, and they had to make themselves interesting. You got to give a lot of props to Inter Miami for making themselves interesting now because of the run that they've gone on, which, by the way, I did not see this run coming, because they've beaten even good teams, and, of course, they've taken care of the teams that are at the bottom of the table, and they've beaten some of those and picked up either wins or – on their worst nights, they're getting a draw and still picking up a point. They've been pretty phenomenal as of late. Kudos to them to try to make themselves relevant here in September and in October as we head down the stretch of the MLS season. So nice job by Inter Miami. Can the Marlins make themselves relevant? We're going to find out this offseason, because if they don't make any real moves, they will not be relevant again. And, you know, you really have to question if they have any commitment to winning at that point, too. That's the sad part. All right, so I just wanted to get that in there. And speaking of soccer, any of you guys watch Ted Lasso? So Lasso and company, they got renewed for another season. And I watch Ted Lasso. I think it's a fantastic show. It is well-written. And Jason Sudeikis is also not only the lead actor, but he's also the writer for it. And so now he got a monster raise, dude. Ted Lasso, sources say, has already closed the deal for the season 3 that will pay him, listen to this, in the vicinity of $1 million per episode. The sum also includes creator fees and compensation for his role as the show's head writer and executive producer. The deal also covers the 2 extra episodes of the current sophomore season, is up from $250,000 to $300,000 per episode that he earned during season 1 and season 2. Now, the other thing that also is Rebecca, which is the tall blonde, Keeley, and Hunt. All three got raises, too, from $125 to $150 that they were getting per episode. From $50,000 to $75,000 to $125,000 to $150,000 per episode, too, which is pretty good money still, right? I mean, I know it's not a long season. I think they're 12-episode season. I think we just finished episode 8 last Friday. And because I watch it with my wife either Friday nights or Saturday nights, we watch Ted Lasso, one of the two, depending on what's going on in the sports calendar. Then we watch a little Ted Lasso. I like to. I don't know if any of you out there watch Ted Lasso on Apple TV, but I suggest you do. It's really, really good. Really, really good. And I got to – let me tell you something. Kudos to Hannah Waddingham. I'm not sure how – let me see. I'll just look it up. I'm not sure how old she is. Because it looks like she's wow. I did not know that. Okay. All right. She's 47. I thought she was actually a little older. Sorry. Anybody watch Ted Lasso, the owner, the tall blonde? Did you think she was 47 or maybe a little older? I thought she was a little older. Tall drink of water, I'll tell you that. There's some dangerous curves on that woman. That's for damn sure. But I guess it's kind of an insult, and I'm sorry. I thought she was a little older. I was going to say that she looks pretty good for being an older lady, and 47, you got right. I didn't know. What is it? Waddle's presence is making DVP look like Terrell Owens. He looked good this week, man. Parker looked good. He looked comfortable. He looked healthy. And I think one of the best things for Devontae Parker is that there are other guys out there now. One, he doesn't become the obvious target. Two, it lights a little fire in his ass because now he's going to have to compete for playing time with Waddle, with Fuller now coming back, and Gesicki. So when Tua drops back now, it's not like he's dependent on Parker. And having Parker healthy also helps in this, ladies and gentlemen, which is what a lot of people will not look at. This gives Preston Williams more time to recover. I do not want to see Miami rush this kid back. I've told you this many times. Now you got Fuller back. You got Waddle playing. You got Gesicki playing. You're getting Shaheen back. And you got Parker. You don't need Parker and Preston Williams on the field at the same time right now. You don't. You only need one of them on the field at this moment because they're kind of the same guy. But the speed is something you cannot take off the field. But once Preston Williams also is able to come back, those of you that had a love affair with Albert Wilson, you're going to be a little disappointed because if Albert Wilson played the way he played this past week, he'll be phased out. Okay? And traded or cut, probably, when it's all said and done. Let's see. What else do we have here? Gesicki was invisible on Sunday. I have to wonder if the guy was Belichick focused on Of course he was. Of course he was. That's exactly what they did. You're not really going to be able to shut down Jalen Waddle. You know that, right? That's where all this stuff gets crazy. How many corners do you think in the NFL are going to be able to play in the slot and shut down Jalen Waddle? It's going to be almost impossible. The kind of speed that kid has, it's just rare in the NFL. So you're going to have to double him, but you can't because now you've got Fuller on the field and you got Gesicki on the field and you got Parker on the field. And going back to the earlier point that I was saying, having Waddle and Fuller on the field and Gesicki doesn't mean Parker's facing the number one corner more often than not. And if the number one corner wants to take care of Parker, even better. But it's going to be rare that Waddle's going to face the number one corner playing from the slot, which is another advantageous position for the Miami Dolphins because they didn't put him on the outside where the teams could easily line up their number one. And if you have Fuller burning people, oh, man, that just makes everything that much tougher for defenses. I think Miami's offense is going to be a lot better this week. I really do. I respect the Bills, but I guess I have more respect also for the Dolphins than most people do. And with Waddle on the field, that's going to open it up for everybody. It opens it up for Parker. It makes his life a little easier. It lights a fire under his ass. It's a lot of good things coming, and that's you're 1-0. Now you're home. You got a shot against a divisional opponent. You're going to get two more weapons added to your offense. I just think it kind of sets everything up for a pretty good day overall. Thomas Jensen says, if Preston can stay healthy, better blocker for bubble screens and outside running plays also. I just want, man, if he stays healthy, it's just a player that really adds a lot to this team. Andy Rivas says, you guys think real high of Williams. All he does is get hurt and drop passes. The drop passes have been an issue. I don't blame him for the injury. Obviously, you're new here, Andy, and you haven't listened to the show a lot. I think his second injury comes from his first injury. Overcompensating, they brought him back too soon. So I'm not going to call the kid injury prone yet. I think it's too early to do that to him. But the drops, can't argue with you. He does have a little problem with drops. That has been a bit of an issue here. He's got to do a better job of hanging on to the football. But his talent cannot be questioned. His upside is there. It's obvious. And if he can just fix that, he'll be all right. Oh, did you know Susie Culver is 57? She looks pretty good, don't you think? Well, I know because she was down here. So, yes, I know because I know she's around my age. I'm 54. I'll be 55. I'll be 55 in 16 days, 17 days, October 1st. I can't drive 55. I'll be Sammy Hager. Okay? The orange rocker for the Dolphins. So, yes, I'm, you know, buddy of mine that's down here in the media used to go out with her. Not going to mention any names. But yes, I know because I know she's from my era. So, yes, I knew that she was. And she looks great, by the way. She looks fantastic for 57. Okay? She looks awesome. I got to be honest. I was a little taken aback by Hannah. Wow. You know, I don't know if they do that on purpose on the show and they make her look a little because, you know, you see pictures of her blonde now and she looks completely different. So I don't know if they're kind of making her look, you know, a little bit more mature. But I was certain she was in her 50s. When I saw 47, I was like, wow, man, holy crap. And she's still good looking and got one hell of a body. I'll give you that. I can't tell you what she did this past week because I don't want to ruin it for you all, but you should watch Ted Lasso. It's actually a really good show. Well written, man. It tugs at your emotions. Put it that way. Really good. Ray Varnekes says, at what time do we default to the top free agent O lineman? I agree we build through the draft, but in your motto, Big O, two or three of these guys fail. Well, Ray, can we wait till they fail? Are you the guy that wants to, that's thinking about divorce when you get married? I'm just wondering, Ray, like, why are we talking about failure yet? Let's wait. I thought Dieter played all right this week. I thought Hunt played all right this week, actually. I got to look at the tape from what I saw. Now, were there struggles? Hell yeah, there were struggles. But they're all young, man. I can't blame these young guys for having their ups and downs. You won the damn game. Even with a struggling line and a young line, you found a way to win 10 games last year. I don't give up on young players right away. Unless I saw the guy in college and I don't think he can play in college, and then they drafted him or whatever. If that's the only way you would hear me say something about a young player, like, no, Yatil Green. I tore Jimmy an ass. I tore him a new hole when he drafted Yetiel Green. Tore him up. Because he sat there in the press conference. Well, no more pulled hamstrings and this, that. And I'm like, dude, did you watch him in college? Because I covered him in college. I was covering a lot of the UM beat in those days. And I would be right on the sidelines. And back in those days, I could go down to the sidelines at any time and be down there for all four quarters. It wasn't like the NFL the last 6 minutes. No. The Syracuse-McNabb game, the entire time I was on the field. The entire time. They used to allow the media back in those days on the field all the time. I mean, let me tell you something. I was very fortunate that the first part of my career, when I was a beat guy and I was covering teams, I had a hell of a lot more access than they have now. I mean, they don't got jack shit now. And especially with pandemic, even worse. But I had a ton of access. So I watched Yetiel Green's ass, and he's a great young man, by the way. You still owe me money, Yetiel, by the way. Yeah, we bet. We made a bet, and he lost. And he owes me money. He bet, I think it was Northwestern, and he went to Plant City, if I'm correct, was his high school. And he tried to tell me, oh, Plant City's a bomb, and I tried to tell him, yo, man, you don't compare South Florida football to anything out there. And I believe it was Northwestern playing Plant City years ago, and we made the bet, and I beat him. I was a beat guy. He was a player. Okay? So reporter and player making bets, which is not the first time. Trace Armstrong, you owe me money too. UM Florida. And he owes me a lot of money. Anyway, so these guys, well, especially Yetiel, you know, they still owe me the money. That's fine, because I know their asses would have tried to collect from me. That's all I know, but whatever. It's fine. I love betting with athletes. I do. Oh, God. I usually can smoke every single athlete in the world on sports. Because they play with their hearts. That's why most of them probably suck at gambling. Anyway, so bottom line is, Yetiel Green would come off the field with a pulled hamstring, a twisted ankle, a calf, whatever it was. The guy was too fragile. And that was at the college level. And it was hard for him to finish games. He was always getting – I would stand there on the sidelines and watch him come off every other play with something tweaked. And then Jimmy drafts him. And Jimmy won, you know, all this stuff. And, oh, he's going to be a great receiver for us. And then he turns to him, no more pulled hamstrings, this, that, and that. And I'm sitting there laughing my ass off inside because I'm in the press conference, so I can't laugh out loud. But I ripped him on draft day, which is how sometimes Dolphins hate me. There are some Dolphins that are going to hate me because I'm going to be brutally honest at times, good or bad. And I ripped Jimmy for that pick. Never gave Yetiel Green a chance. I never gave him a chance because I saw 15 injuries at UM. And I said, this guy can't hold up. Look, more often than not, if you and I played football, we would be Yetiel Green. We would break down left and right. It takes a special athlete to actually stay healthy in football. Right? That whole thing, your biggest talent is availability, right? Is that whatever the saying goes? That guy was never available. And I tore Jimmy up, dude. Tore him up. Because I knew it was a stupid-ass pick. I like the kid. Nice kid. But couldn't hold up. So those are the moments where you'll see me that maybe I won't give a young guy a chance. But I gave you a reason why. Because I personally watched the guy break down all the time on the sidelines. I do miss those days. I will say, I miss the days when I was a beat guy that I had access. And I got to people and I was able to talk to them and meet with them and whatever and all that stuff. It's obviously a lot harder for media members now than it used to be. But those are the moments. More often than not, I will be patient with young people and give them an opportunity because they deserve that opportunity. It's got to be special cases that you draft somebody and I have some information on it from somebody else or whatever, those kind of things. Let's see. What else do we have here? Oh, who do you think? Herman says, oh, why do you think that changed before the pandemic, the media availability? Paranoia, my brother. That's all it is. With Jimmy, with Shula and Jimmy, I don't know if I was able to go around the fields with Shula, but with Jimmy, Jimmy used to allow us to be all around the practice field. Not, you know how they're stuck in the stands now. I used to be able to walk both fields. On the outside, the periphery, you couldn't walk in between the two fields, but you could walk the whole square around both fields. And so if they were doing one-on-ones in one area, I'd go over there and see it, and then I'd come back and see the teams and then the seven-on-sevens or whatever that, and I could stand right there, 10, 20 feet away from some of this stuff going on, so I could see what was going on. I could hear them talk about it. I could many times I heard a coach ripping into a player or whatever, or a player snapping back at a coach or all that kind of stuff. Not that we reported that kind of stuff because that's kind of the professional courtesy that you gave them while they give you the access. But it was it allowed you to really cover the team and give it. And then Wanstead took over, and we had the same access. But as his tenure got worse – And the controversy built, he started to limit more access. And then the other coaches picked up from that, and then other coaches around the league also started limiting access. And now you're down – I don't even know if there's any more press groups that are allowed to watch practice now. Because you used to be able to watch practice back in the day. And they would tell you, okay, you can't report anything you see. Because you're watching legitimate, like, game planning practice. But at least you got a feel for the team and you knew everything. And then you can use the context when you are writing your story or talking about the team like I was back in the day. But it's pure paranoia, man. It's pure paranoia that they think somebody else is going to get the information, that the media will leak it to somebody else or something like that, and it could happen. And there were times where a media member slipped and said something about practice, and then that media member would be, you know, kicked out for a couple of weeks or a month or a season if it was a habitual thing, something like that, and then that media member could no longer cover practice, and then that outlet would have to decide, do we keep them on the beat or not? Do we move them to another beat, and then we put somebody else there? That kind of stuff. So it's mostly paranoia why people or coaches are now giving very little to no access to the media at this point in time. Yeah. I know these guys that all write, they're hurting right now that they don't have those locker room moments where they can get one-on-ones. Because I know, because I took advantage of that all the effing time when I was a media guy. You know, and when I was a beat guy, that is. And I would go into locker rooms, then I could find guys. I could go corner them and talk to them by myself and get some information from them. Something you can't do now. You have no shot unless you have the guy's cell phone, and then you can talk to him outside of the building. Big O, I know you're high on Preston Williams and what he brings to the field, but with this healing time the team is giving him, if he gets injured again, even after the extra time, you still high on him? No. I'm not big on injury-prone players, as you can tell with the story I just told you about Yetiel Green. I give up on injury-prone players. I do. But I'm not calling him injury-prone yet because the second injury, I truly believe, came from the first injury and overcompensation. So when he comes back, if he stays healthy, that's fine. Now, he has to, as Mr. Rivas pointed out earlier, he does have to eliminate the drops also. But I, physically, what I see there, the athlete I see there, oh, dude, I like this player, man. I like this player. This guy has the capabilities of being a number one or number two wide receiver. He is super gifted. He really is. But now he's got to stay healthy, and he's got to catch the football on a consistent basis. But yeah, I think if he comes back now, you know, healthy, in which they're taking the time. Yeah, I can't have another injury with Preston Williams. Then at that point, you got to cut him, is what I feel you got to do. I remember Jimmy Johnson passing on Randy Moss and telling everybody that Larry Shannon will be better. All right, listen, we laughed at him with the whole Larry Shannon thing. We laughed at him. Remember how this went, by the way, okay? First of all, he had the pick for Randy Shannon. I want to say the Dolphins were 19th. And then Green Bay was 21, right? So they traded back to 21, right? And then I think the Cowboys, they went and picked Vonnie Holiday. And I believe the Cowboys then picked Randy Moss. I think that's how it went. And then at 21, then they traded down again to like 27 or 28 or something like that, and they picked John Avery. So Jimmy then is asked about, well, would you have picked Randy Moss if you stayed there? He said, no, I would have picked Vonnie Holiday. Now, Vonnie Holiday did end up being a really good player and well worth that pick. He had a hell of a career. He ended up playing for the Dolphins eventually, remember? And quality individual, a super pro, a terrific player overall. Vonnie Holiday had a really good career, well worth the pick. Okay? Fine. He then drafts in that same draft Larry Shannon in the third round. And again, just to correct you a little bit, okay? When we pressed him on multiple things, Randy Moss, no. If I would have stayed there, I would have taken Vonnie Holiday. You guys can look at the order or whatever. I'm pretty close to what it was. And then John Avery, which I'll give you a John Avery story in a minute. And then we asked him about Larry Shannon. And he says, hey, Larry Shannon will be as good as Randy Moss. Okay? I'm not the biggest fan of Jimmy the Dolphins coach, all right? I really am not. I'm not that impressed with what he did. I'm really pissed off at the way he handled the Marino situation. I hated how he handled the 62-7 loss. It was gutless as hell. There's a lot of shit that I don't forgive Jimmy Johnson for in his tenure. I know he got the defensive players. I get all of that, but he did a lot of stuff that I was not happy with, to be honest with you. He did a lot of stupid shit, too, trading for Jim Druckenmiller and drafting John Dutton and Jarris McFailer. And I mean, he was just a disaster on offense. So Jimmy, like, compounded the problem there. He was, like, so hard-headed, like, no, I wouldn't have drafted Randy Moss. I would have drafted Vonnie Holiday if I stayed with that pick. I wasn't picking Randy Moss. I was picking Vonnie Holiday. And then he takes John Avery at the back end of the first round. And then he tells us the thing about Larry Shannon. John Avery, by the way, really good kid, okay? Jeremiah says, I love Jimmy. He got a Zach and JT. Yeah, okay. Anyway, so John Avery. John Avery was a guy that, let's just say, he wasn't a pro's pro. Nice kid, kind of a goof, wasn't really a professional, wasn't really dedicated to his craft the way he should have been. Just an athlete and a guy that could, you know, you could use on special teams, that kind of stuff. And I think that's, you know, Jimmy wanted that lightning guy on special teams. So this guy had a tendency of falling asleep in meetings. So every day before meetings. Excuse me. So they would have the practice. They would come into the locker rooms. We would interview the players. We would be in the locker rooms for 45 minutes. When the 45 minutes were done, the players then went to their meetings, okay? At that moment, that's when John Avery had to then fight off sleep, kind of like what I was doing right now, had to fight off sleep. And part of fighting off that sleep, you know what he did? He had Kool-Aid in his locker room. And he had like 9 different flavors of Kool-Aid. So he would get a big old jug, a glass that was like a giant big gulp cup. It wasn't a big gulp, but it was just a big ass plastic cup that he had. And he'd load it up, dude, with the punch of the whatever Hawaiian punch of the day flavor that he was going to use and some sugar. And then he goes, this is what keeps me up during the meetings. So there's your John Avery pick and your lack of professionalism while he was here with the Miami Dolphins. Let's see. Jimmy didn't get to build the offense like he wanted to because we had an aging Marino. That wasn't his fault. Jeremiah, bro, listen. All right. Let me see. What else do we have here? I'm just thinking. You get to a point where you're just like, you know, when the comments are just really like baseless, empty, and they got no substance, you just got to forget about them and just move on, bro. Let's see. What else do we have here? Rafael Tua not getting benched unless all this goes terribly wrong. Why are we benching Tua now? I don't even know what it is. Big O, I got my eye on Solana coin. You in? No, dude. No. Not at all. You never buy anything on Parabolic, bro. Let me teach you guys something about crypto. Okay? If you didn't get Solana a month and a half ago, 2 months ago, when it was at $40, you don't buy it at 170, bro. You don't buy it at 160 and 180 and 200. Are you crazy? It doesn't make any sense. I wish you luck. Any of you that bought Solana, that's fine. Never buy a stock. And I don't play the stock market anymore, but I think that most people would agree with me on this. Here, I see Tremolio there. He's a stock guy. Never buy a stock, and you never buy a coin on a parabolic move. Ever. Never. You don't do it. 99% of the time, you're going to get screwed. Solana made its run. I don't know how much more is left. Maybe there's more. Maybe it triples from here. I'm not sure. But you don't buy Cardano now at $246, at $3, or whatever. You had to buy it when it was at $1, $1.50, $1.60, at 90 cents, at 70 cents. That's when you had to buy it. Once something goes parabolic, you are now risking loss at that point because with every parabolic move, there's a correction. Always. Like 99% of the time. Okay? I'm telling you because I do this all the time. I play it every day. I watch this market every day. Never, ever buy anything when it's parabolic. Ever. It's just not worth it. This is why they tell you that when it's running like that is when you sell. When it's bleeding and everything's going down, that's when you buy. That's why I told you for several months, right? A couple months ago, I told you during the consolidation period, I told you, take advantage, buy the effing dip. And if you would have bought Ethereum at 17, 18, 1900, 2000, 2100, well, guess what? You're making a boatload of money right now. If you would have bought Cardano when I told you 90 cents and $1 and $1.10 or $1.20, it's at 250 and it's gone up to 3 and it's going to go higher. Now you're riding high. If you bought VeChain when I told you in the recent dip or the one before, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 cents, well, guess what? It's now at 13. It's gone up to 17. I told you about Crow. It was down to 12 and 11 cents. It's been up to 17. It was up at 20. You understand? You do not buy anything when it's gone parabolic. It just does not make sense. It sets you up for failure. The people that bought Bitcoin at 60 and 65, they're still losing money. Now, they'll make their money eventually. Bitcoin will get back over 60 and 65, and it'll get to 70 and 80 and 100. I truly believe that. I have no doubt in that. But if you bought it parabolic at 60 and 65, which I know people that did, guess what they ended up doing? Panicking and selling it at 38 and 42 and 45, and they lost their ass. Because that, if you're not willing, now let me, Sidola, here's the best advice I could give you. If you bought something parabolic, you know what you need to do now? Put it away and hold on forever now. Because it's going to come back. And now you're going to have to wait, like the people that bought it at 60 and 65 for Bitcoin. They will have to, if you're smart, you take your lumps, you wait patiently, you let it sit there, and let it come back eventually. That's what you do. Please, never, I'm not a financial advisor, okay? But I'm just telling you, at least the way I do things, never buy anything parabolic. Ever. When you FOMO in, you're done. And if you FOMO in, then you better be committed to the long term of that coin or that stock. Always. Trust me. I'm telling you, that is 100%. Look, Tremolio says, never chase upside. Correct. Never. It's the worst thing that you can do. It's the problem is, most people don't follow this shit. You know, by the way, some of you know that Solana is not even really truly decentralized. I'm just saying, you know, that's the reason why I've never invested in Solana. While it's a hell of a blockchain and people are building stuff on it, it's not truly decentralized. And that's something that concerns me, kind of like Internet Computer ICP is another one that they want to become the Internet of the blockchain, but their nodes are not decentralized. It's they run the nodes. So, no, dude, I don't want that. No. That's not what DeFi is about, man. So be careful. Do your homework. Read. I'm just saying, if you're going to get into this, this is not for the weak of heart. Oh, damn, I'm sorry. Let's go. All right, let's talk a little Canes with Manny Navarro next.
Then there's only one store to go to, and that's Caneswear at Miami Fanwear in Davie. They're your one-stop shop for all your inner Miami CF, Canes, Dolphins, Panthers, and Marlins merchandise. They have hats, t-shirts, game day jerseys, and so much more. Located at 2511 South University Drive in Davie and open 24/7 online at caneswear.com or innermiamiwear.com. Call them at 954-835-5597. Caneswear, the spot where inner Miami and all Miami sports fans shop.
The viewpoints, statements, or beliefs expressed on the following program by the host, guests, or callers are not necessarily the opinions of FantasyXS.com, Media Group Inc., ownership, management, sponsors, or website. Time for Canes fans to get what they want. Information, insight, and perspective. It's the Canes Wear Miami Hurricanes Report with Manny Navarro, exclusively on the Big O Radio Show. Here's Big O and insider Manny Navarro.
I apologize, Manny. I get passionate about crypto, man. I'm sorry. I'm trying.
It's all right, man.
I was looking out for people, bro. Just never buy parabolic. That's all I'm telling you. Never buy anything on its way up. You're not a crypto guy anyways, right? You're not into crypto or stocks, are you?
Nah.
Okay.
No, I got my stocks from The Athletic that I have investments in, but I don't even pay attention to it, man. Somebody else handles that for me.
Oh, that's right. You are big time. So yes, yeah, you got the peoples working for you. I got you. So Manny, how is? Because we'll have you on Friday, and we can talk Michigan State. Now, I want to recap what's gone on outside of the cat, of course, which was the highlight. How close were you to the cat, by the way?
Well, I went down there and I saw the cat piss that was all over the poor people in Section 207. I mean, they were covered in it.
So let me ask you something. Let me ask you something. If you were dangling from the second floor, wouldn't you be peeing in your pants too? Right. Right.
There'd be more than pee in my pants,
yes,
Big O.
Yes. 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 There's no doubt. So, how close were you to that craziness?
I went down there at halftime, and I talked to everybody who was involved and saw the whole thing take place. So I was there to witness it and, you know, saw the videos, and people sent me extra video. You know, everybody had an angle of this thing. So
right.
I got about 40 different versions of the video of the cat dangling. So,
yeah. Our boy Hollywood over at QAM was, he went viral with his video too. So that's good for him. I hope he made some money off of it if he's smart, actually, because I had one of those too. And I made a few bucks, you know. So you got to be smart with it.
You did the right thing.
Yeah. Oh yeah. 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 I had a lady go absolutely ape shit on a JetBlue plane, and I was sitting on the opposite row of her, but right on her aisle, you know. And so I had my camera, and I just had it rolling the entire time. In fact, A&E had my video. A couple weeks ago on that whole series that they do of people going crazy, the lady on JetBlue that went crazy, that's yours truly. That's my video there. It says Big O Show on it, actually. So, yeah. It's
that's neat.
Yeah. I had several outlets, and I told them, there's a price. So pay me, baby. Pay me. Give me some money. I hope Danny made a little cash from all of that. All right, let's start with the offense, dude, because, you know, the shine is coming off of Rhett Lashley a little bit here in the first couple of games. And maybe, you know, because we all made the mistake of, oh, my God, Mark Richt is there. But, you know, Manny's this up-and-coming coach. We got to make sure we keep him. And then he left the Temple. And then they, we got to bring him back. And it hasn't been impressive. And listen, I am your left tackle on this. I always give you credit when I say it. You know, I want a guy that's experienced, that knows how to build programs in this place. That's what I want. So the shine now has fallen off of Rhett Lashley, where people say, well, you get rid of Manny and you keep Rhett Lashley. Well, you know, last 2 weeks, what's going on with the offense?
Well, I think they're being out-schemed, right? I think what you saw Appalachian State doing the second half was like, well, De'Aaron King's not going to beat us deep, right? We're going to drop eight guys. And what was De'Aaron King forced to do? Run. And that's not good enough to get in the end zone. Miami needs its receivers down the middle of the field. They need Will Mallory to be involved. They need Charleston Rambo to beat guys deep. They need Keyshawn Smith to be effective in the passing game. And more than anything, they really miss Mike Harley right now. Second half 2020 Mike Harley, the guy who put up a bunch of great numbers, he's kind of reverted back to the guy we saw the first 3.5 years at Miami, right? Dropping passes, being inconsistent. So to me, right now, they're being out-schemed. They're being out-coached on the offensive side. And I think they're also being let down by some guys in their offensive line that are veterans. Guys that, you know, have over 30 starts. They're starting right guard, Navon Donaldson, right? The guy who's always battled weight issues. The guy who, before he injured his knee, was losing playing time to guys behind him, younger guys behind him, because he wasn't in good shape. He couldn't last very long. Well, you know, him and DJ Scaife, to me, both of those guys, they look like they're going to be on the bench this week against Michigan State.
Yeah.
And, you know, Garen Justice trusted those guys coming out of camp, and now he's having to hit the reset button and say, you know what, I got to put other guys in the field, because when the lights come on, you're not showing up.
Yeah, and see, that's why all this talk about the 19 of 22 starters coming back and all the experience, but you were bringing back mediocre in the end, and the line has been mediocre. And so to talk about all this, you know, experience and everything else, and here's the other thing. Not enough guys have developed under Manny here into his third year. That's my other problem. You have a couple guys that have improved, but you need a hell. Like, I watch the guy in Davey, and he's got several guys that are improving from year to year. His teams play their worst football at the beginning of the year, and they get better as the year goes on, which is what you're supposed to do, obviously. We don't see that with these guys. And with the offensive line, so then are we going to see guys that are younger now? Is that what it is? And now we're going to have a lack of experience that's going to be out there on the line.
Well, I mean, look, Garen spoke to us today, Garen Justice, the offensive line coach, and, you know, he was pretty adamant that the best offensive lineman they've had has been Jalen Rivers. That's the second-year freshman that they just got, and he's the starting left guard. And he's the only guy, really, in his mind, that's playing to a standard. Even Zion Nelson. Zion Nelson, you could sort of blame a little bit on, you know, the fact that he was hurt, right? And he missed some of training camp, and he's just kind of getting the rust off. He hasn't been horrendous. The side where, if you watch the game and you say, well, where are teams getting pressure on D'Eriq? Where are guys not picking up their blocks and blocking well? It's been the right side. It's been Navon Donaldson and DJ Scaife. Well, they benched Scaife for this last game against App State, and now it looks like they're going to bench Donaldson, and you're going to end up seeing Justice Oluwasun, the kid who, by the way, Garen went into the transfer portal to get because he knew, hey, these guys might let me down, right? He went in, he got him. He's going to push him inside and put Jared Williams back out to right tackle. And I think, you know, look, as a coach, all you can do is coach guys up. In the end, it's on them when they get on the field, Orlando, to take care of the job and to do what they're supposed to do. And that's why, you know, it's interesting. We can sit here and shit on the coaches and say, hey, they're not getting these guys ready, or hey, they recruited them. You know, it's their fault. They should be. I think in some respects, we do have to recognize that at least on the offensive side of the ball, these are new coaches who are recruiting players. They inherited a lot of the old guys who lost to FIU and to Louisiana Tech and to Duke. And while you try your damnedest to coach those guys up, I think it's become pretty obvious that these cats don't change their stripes, man. They're the same cats we saw lose to FIU. And so, you know, you got to throw fresh blood in there. And my understanding was Jared Williams didn't have a very good camp. DJ Scaife really played better in camp. But, you know, obviously now after two games, they're making the adjustment. We'll see if Jared Williams can rise to the occasion and make these guys look better. But, it's hard to get offensive linemen to play as freshmen and sophomores and get them to play well first and second year. The only guy right now who they got in the last 2 years who's playing is Jalen Rivers. And we'll see how these other guys come along in the years to come. But it's obvious that they're average. If Jalen Rivers has come in, this is his second start, and he's already the best offensive lineman they got.
It's crazy. Manny, did they lose their best running back this week? I think
yes.
I think you said it a couple times that you thought he was the best running back out of the group.
Yeah, there's no doubt. Don Chaney, in terms of explosiveness, consistency, vision, all the things you want in a running back, he was the best one that they had, the most complete one that they had. And it's a shame because he was just starting to get healthy again after the shoulder surgery in April. And so, look, this week you're going to have, because of the suspension of Jalen Knighton, you're going to have two true freshmen backing up Cameron Harris. And so I think Rhett Lash is going to have to get creative this week, man. I think you're going to see some situations where Will Mallory's in the backfield, back there to protect, right? Or Elijah Royal, the backup tight end. They're going to have to be creative here with who they leave back there, because Cam Harris isn't going to be able to play 75, 80 snaps by himself. And it's going to be quite obvious that when those freshmen are in the game, that they're only there to run it. Because if you leave them the responsibility to pass block with those guys just getting there, you know how hard it is for running backs to understand blocking schemes.
Oh, yeah.
They
struggle in the NFL with it.
Yeah, yeah. So you can't expect an 18-year-old Cody Brown, the kid out of Georgia, who, by the way, is a really good running back. You can't expect him to come in and play a whole lot this week. So it's Cam Harris or bust. And if Cam Harris goes down, man, I'm really interested to see what happens then. They got to hope that he stays healthy for the next 2 weeks.
Well, why is the other kid suspended? Do you know? Or you can't.
There's no arrest records. There's no arrest records in Dayton Broward.
Or you can't tell us because you'll have to kill us. Which one is it?
No. I'll put it to you this way. Whatever he did is not in the database for Dade and Broward County. So this to me is something that happened on campus that they're able to cover up.
Okay. All right. Because not a good sign either. You know, you lose one guy and then the other guy, whatever
right.
It is, that he's got some kind of maturity issues. You know, he's got to figure it out. Defensively. When you look at what App State was able to do, and look, this is a game where they gave Miami the 2 points on the bad snap and then the short field for the touchdown, too. They kind of gave them 9 points in all of this. Defensively,
Chase Bryce gave that game away. Their quarterback gave that game away.
Right, yeah. Yeah, yeah, definitely, definitely. But they, I mean, they had the opportunity there. Defensively, what have you seen from this team that, that makes you feel like they've made big-time strides? Nothing.
It's really hard to point anything out, Big O. You put me on the spot.
I saw your face. That's all I needed.
I don't have a lot of pause. I guess Tyreek Stevenson, right? He played pretty well.
Yeah, he did, actually.
Right?
Yeah.
He had three pass breakups.
Yeah.
Here's what I see. Number one, in the back end, there's too much confusion, too many breakdowns where the safety and the cornerbacks are not – like, there's too many plays where receivers are running wide open, okay? And I think that's their number one issue. Whose fault is that? Again, Travarius Robinson has a great reputation. He puts guys in the first round of the NFL draft at cornerback all the time. It's the same guys, right? It's the same dudes playing, making the same mistakes over and over again. I don't know. Up front, you know, I think Appalachia State got the ball out quickly. I don't think Manny Diaz was lying about that. There were a lot of situations where the ball was getting out fast. They are a running team. So the fact that they only had two sacks on the year, I don't know how much of that is, you know, you could put on them not blitzing enough. I think they're blitzing a lot. I think they're trying to get to the quarterback a lot. I just think the ball's getting out quickly. Chance Williams, he's the guy who deflected the ball, right? He's the guy who had the fumble against Alabama that he forced on the sack. And this week he again, it's the young guys. It's Jalen Rivers. It's Chance Williams. It's the transfer, Tyreek Stevenson. I get it. We want to shit on the coaches because they're not getting these guys ready or they're not preparing or playing at their best. But at some point, when do you turn around and say, I mean, do you think Manny Diaz isn't teaching these? You think these guys aren't being told this?
Yeah, but that
over.
Yeah, but that's his fault. That's his fault. I mean, these are the kids that he has. If they're not learning, that's his fault. You recruited the wrong kid. You brought the wrong kid to the University of Miami. That's just the bottom line. You didn't bring a kid that was caring enough to learn what he has to learn and get it done. And that to me, that's – and this is where I've piggybacked off of you now, where we're at a point now where – look, bro, Manny Diaz is what he is, just like Randy Shannon, just like Al Golden. In the end, I'm not even here to blame Blake James anymore. To me, it's all about this administration. This is what you get. Look, I see USC now fires Clay Helton, and, USC hasn't been able to find its way back to being elite. Neither has Tennessee. Texas has been in that battle for many years now. Florida State just lost to Jacksonville State. And that Norville guy hasn't done anything. You see what's going on.
Hey,
here,
Big
Miami.
O.
Huh?
Big O. Somebody we know won a big game last weekend. What's his name again?
Oh, wait a minute.
That coach at Oregon who won a big game.
Oh, Crystal Ball. Yeah. Crystal Ball.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Somebody won a big game, right?
Yeah.
I laugh
at silly Canes fans that think he's going to leave Oregon and Nike money to come here. You know what I mean? It's like it gets so ridiculous.
Right.
But if UM didn't have such an ego, I guess, as an administration, they would have told, Mario years ago, hey, get your ass back here and run our program. You took FIU to bowl games. You certainly, and you were the number one recruit in the country for Nick Saban. Get your ass over here. But they're butthurt from all this stuff.
You know what that was? Hurt feelings from Mario leaving Al Golden's staff to go learn under Nick Saban. That's all that was.
Yeah, and I talked about this yesterday, and I put it bluntly. I said, you're a piece of shit if you are holding someone back from improving themselves. Or you're not encouraging them to go improve themselves. And he would have never gotten that Oregon job if he was stuck here in Miami. And he might have been fired with Al Golden and everybody else and just labeled like the problem. It's like Chris Greer, dude. Chris Greer was there for 16 years, never getting the job. But every regime that took over kept him. Why? Because his reports are on the hard drive. His reports must have been pretty damn good. So everybody kept around like, okay, he knows how to scout. And finally they gave the black guy an opportunity. And so finally he's able to get, you know what I'm saying? So Mario, it's so silly at this point. Miami burned themselves for being butthurt. The guy went to Alabama. It's a better job. You know, congratulate the guy. Wish him the best. That way you never burn the bridge and you can bring him back just in case. Instead, you think small and this is where you're at. And this is why I'm with you now. But complaining about Manny or Blake James doesn't matter a damn bit. Because if the administration is going to spend the money on the Diazes of the world and the Goldens of the world and the Shannons of the world, Miami is dead in the water, bro. You got to find yourself an elite staff, not just a coach, as you know, offensive and defensive coordinators. Bro, you're playing against Alabama, and there are NFL head coaches next to Nick Saban running his team. I mean, this is crazy. This is what you're competing against. So until you take it to that level, it really doesn't matter complaining about Manny Diaz anymore.
Agreed. And, you know, I was having this conversation with Matt Schildell, who writes for Cane Sport. He's covered the team as long as I have, 20 years. And, you know, we were looking at the field today, and I told Matt, I said, hey, you know, we want to talk about part of the issue here. Look at the NFL rosters right now. How many former Hurricanes are even starters in the NFL, Big O? How many guys are they producing?
It's dying out.
That do anything.
It's dying out.
That number is down to like 6 or 7 in terms of starters. Yes, they've got 28 guys in the league and a few more on practice squads. But you're literally down to like Greg Rousseau, Calais Campbell, in terms of impact players. Denzel Perryman's only starting for the Raiders because his coach, his former coach with the Chargers is now with the Raiders. You know, Braxton Berrios is like the one guy who's doing something offensively. You have two line, like there's not the whole thing about, oh, well, look at how great we're doing on Sundays. That thing is ended for recruits. Like there's really nobody to point to for them to say, yeah, that's a Hurricane. That's a guy that I want to come to. So to me, when you talk about replacing the coach, when you talk about, you know, pointing to greatness, like there is a huge gap now where you have a lot more to overcome as a program. 10 years ago, when Al Golden was here, there were a lot of NFL guys that came out of the University of Miami he could point to when he went into recruits' houses and said, look, that guy's a Hurricane. That guy's a John Vilma, whoever, Frank Gore, all these guys, Greg Olson, right? They were all Canes.
Yeah.
And to me, that matters. That's going to matter for whoever takes over here eventually or whatever happens down the road. Like, the kids are growing up, and there's no Hurricanes to watch on Sunday.
No, the guy you just mentioned put in a left tackle into the NFL. His quarterback is kicking ass for the LA Chargers, and his safety is here with the Miami Dolphins. You know what I mean? So, you know, you're watching Oregon make an impact by putting people out there at a lot higher rate right now than the University of Miami. I mean, even it's silly for a Canes fan to think that he would leave that place. Last week, even a guy goes to me, Mario should go to LSU. And I go, why should he? He should stay at Oregon, dominate the Pac-12, make it easy for him to get into
easy
the playoffs.
Conference.
Right, and then get into the playoffs and then play the big boys. Why would you want to go to the SEC and kill yourselves because only one team's going to get out of it because you're beating yourselves up throughout the season to get there? It doesn't make any sense. You're better off staying in the Pac-12. And right now he's got a chance at dominating the Pac-12 now because he's got the best team and the resources. That's the other thing. I'm serious. If he goes from that place to this place, he's going to feel like he's in an alley with a can begging for quarters. You know what I'm saying? It's just...
Hey, all Phil Knight has to do is bring up a couple of La Carretas, put them up there on Eugene, and they're set. Like, what else does Mario need at that point?
Right, exactly. Just have Bustelo set up a little coffee stand there, and that's it. Right? You got your Pollo Tropical. We're going to give you a little Café Bustelo. Y ahí está la carreta, chico. And that's it.
That's it. He's fine.
That's it. His bistec empanizado and then un cafecito and... Un pastel later on, and, you know, maybe we'll move Vicky Bakery over there too at the same time. That's it. We'll just have like a little Latin area for that. And they'll probably get rich over there because all those folks out there, they've never eaten that food. So we'll fatten their asses.
Never experienced it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a beautiful thing, brother. I know you don't get to go into the locker rooms right now, but what are you hearing about the, I don't know, the mood, the atmosphere, the confidence of the players at this point in time?
It's hard to say. Oh, I think there's certainly a lot of guys with hurt feelings, right? Those guys who wanted or expected to play or thought they would have a role and they don't. They've kind of been phased out. I can only assume that at some point or another, that's going to be something else they're going to have to overcome, because those guys are going to get pissed off and probably become problematic. You know, again, I think the ultimate thing for Manny Diaz is he needs De'Aaron King to play well, and he needs him to lead well, and he needs him to rub off on other guys in that locker room. And right now he's not playing well, and they're not playing well, which means that locker room is probably not doing well. Last year's 8-1 start did a lot to fix it, but knowing these kids, covering them from high school on, knowing a lot of them that play for this team, they love to change schools right away when things don't work out. Yeah. They love to do that in high school. I wonder how much of that is going through their mind right now.
Crazy stuff. All right, what are you working on in The Athletic, my brother, so folks can check you out?
Well, I'm going to have a new podcast up soon, probably Wednesday. Colton Pouncey, who covers Michigan State for The Athletic, he and I are going to sit down and break the game down. So that'll be available. I'm writing today off of some of the stuff Garen talked to us about, pointing out some of the deficiencies on offense, getting into that a little bit more. And then on the defensive side of the ball, the same thing. So I'll have my my weekly report on that. You know, everything else right now, is kind of, to me, irrelevant. Like the whole recruiting stuff, like how can you talking to recruits at this point with the way the season is? It's kind of like we really have no idea what's going to happen, right? Because if it falls apart, so is the recruiting class. So
yeah,
I'm kind of leaving recruiting in the back burner because, to me, there's still a lot to be decided here in the weeks ahead.
Yeah, no, right now I'm looking at it, and I'm taking Michigan State plus six and a half.
You're taking it?
Yeah. I don't think the Canes are any kind of team that can give somebody a touchdown right now. I mean, I just don't believe that. You know what I mean? I have trouble with that. I have no faith right now in what's going on in that program, and I am terrified that this thing will never be a decent program again. It's just going to be mediocre. I mean, think about how bad UM and Florida State are and how far they have fallen, dude. I mean, that is it's ugly. I would have never thought this, dude. I thought they were set to be perennial powers year in and year out because of the way they've set everything up with their recruiting, where they're at in Florida. They would be so sexy to so many players all the time. And Miami had so much success changing coaches and still succeeding, which is not normal, by the way. Normally, you want to have long runs with coaches because that's when you can establish it. But you know what? I was foolish to think that it would continue, that you would just find the next one and the next one. And now it's been hard to find that next one. It's crazy.
Yeah, and really what happened was once the bus stops rolling, right, it's hard to get it rolling again. It's hard. It really is. And I'll tell you this. It's not just Miami. Michigan, right? I know they're 2-0 this year, but
that's right.
How much heartache have they gone through with Harbaugh? Texas just lost to Arkansas. I mean, they're a team that spends a shitload of money on coaches.
USC.
There's four or five teams.
USC.
There's four or five teams.
USC.
Yeah, USC is another one.
Tennessee never recovered, dude, and Tennessee was always
right.
Always a perennial top 25 team. You never wanted to go to Tennessee to play the Vols. Ever, bro. That place was a home field advantage for them because they're singing that stinking Rocky Top.
And now Pittsburgh walks in there and beats them like nothing.
Right. It's crazy, man. And again, stability, like what I talked about before. You fire, what's it called, the guy from Tennessee, now Fulmer, and you never recover. Now, how crazy is this? Kansas football's never really mattered. But, dude, the day they fired Mangino, they were actually half decent with Mangino, and they fired him. You look at South Florida with Jim Leavitt. They were up in the top five ranking. They were putting players into the NFL. Jason Pierre-Paul is still in the NFL from that era. And they fired the guy, and I know he went after one of the kids, whatever. But the bottom line is, it's funny how it's really fragile that once you may end up firing somebody, but you never know if you're ever going to be able to recover from it now, too.
Big O, I think, you know, the biggest problem college football has now, and we've talked about this some, it's really four or five teams, right? It's really, yeah, that's it. And I think 10 years ago, you could be the 20th ranked team and feel like, you know what? If we get our act together, our quarterback gets hot, we might actually have a chance to sneak up and get into a big bowl game and have a chance to win a national championship. That's not the case anymore.
Yeah.
It's four or five teams, and that's why they're expanding the 12 teams, because they know, I mean, when I think we had a run here of the last 11 years where either Alabama, Ohio State, or Clemson has played in the championship. It's been one of those three teams 10 out of the last 11 years. So when it's that easy, where those three teams are always getting in there, something's wrong, and that's why they're trying to expand the playoffs so that you can change recruiting a little bit, so that kids are like, okay, I don't have to go to one of those three schools to play in championship games or to have a chance to play in championship games. That's why it's so important to expand the playoff.
Yeah, yeah. And in closing, we'll tell the butthurt UM administration, one of those four, five, six teams is going to now be Oregon with Mario Cristobal. So
yes.
So get used to it also.
Yep.
All right, Manny, excellent work as always by you, my brother. I appreciate you. We will talk to you again on Friday, my friend. Thank you very much, sir.
See you Friday, buddy. Take
you
care.
You got it. There you go. Manny Navarro, baby. Gotta love it with our Canesware Miami Hurricanes report.